Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today, this beautiful July 9th, 2020. What an evening. What a day it was, and what a great evening. And here we are in the studios. I am so pleased to have with me as my guest, Mr. Jack Cashel. He's the author. You remember him. He's been in the studio before. He's the author of, let me get this. Remember this book? I hope everyone has a copy of this book, TWA 800. The crash, the cover up, and the conspiracy. Oh, hey, I'll tell you what a great book this is. But, and the book, it was, I think he was in the studio when this was just released. The Hunt, yes. But now there's another book. You ready for this? Unmasking Obama. Unmasking Obama. The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. That's right. And guess what? It's not out yet. It's coming out August 18th, but I've got an advanced copy. Don't tell anyone. Shh. In fact, I'm going to put it up on eBay. No, I'm not. But what a great book this is. I just want to tell you that when this comes out, this is going to leave a mark. It is, for a number of reasons. All right. Before we get started, I want to thank the fine folks at Lightstream for making my life easier, for making the lives of our listeners and viewers easier. Lightstream. Did you know that refinancing your credit card balances can lower your interest rate and save you money? And you don't have to be a financial expert to do it. Lord knows if that was the case. Yeah, I couldn't have done it, but Lightstream makes it easy. Get a fixed rate credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream and you could save thousands in interest. Rates start at 5.95% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. It's lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Can you believe that? 19 and then 20 and then, oh my goodness. Yeah. Again, you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are absolutely no fees. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. I know. I've talked to so many people. We've got so many testimonials. They all say thank you to Lightstream. In fact, a neighbor of mine absolutely thanked me for turning me on to Lightstream. He is now saving about $225 a month in payments. And the interest rate, his average interest rate on credit cards was just over 19%. So, hey, take advantage of this. Now, here's how to get this offer. My listeners can apply today for a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. That is LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman. This is subject to credit card approval. Rates include a 0.50 auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You will thank me later. All right. So let me get into this. Guess what? In the studio, not only is Jack Cashel here, but the infamous Susan Daniels. and another gentleman who appeared on the show some time ago, Mr. Privateer. I hope he doesn't mind me saying that. So here's the deal, folks. Well, by the way, don't forget, tomorrow Roger Stone is going to be with me in the first hour, maybe his last interview before he's got to report to the federal prison, or perhaps his sentence can be perhaps the whole thing can be, people are saying pardon, but maybe just a commutation so he can prove his innocence, which I think would be the best. So tomorrow evening, Roger Stone. So I got an advanced copy of Jack Cashel's book, Unmasking Obama. And I'm looking through the acknowledgments. And I saw my name. So I asked him, I said, Mr. Cashel, Jack, what did I do to deserve an acknowledgment? I really didn't deserve it. Well, Eric, the tech, are we okay? See, this thing's happening behind the scene. So, you know, that's why the thing's on the screen. But look at this, Unmasking Obama. That's the new book. So I said I didn't deserve it. So first of all, Jack Cashel.
Hey, Doug, thanks for having me on. And Susan, happy birthday.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to say that.
She's 39 today and looking great. No, you know, it's because it's odd because I was just looking at the acknowledgments this morning. I forgot I put you there, but there's a reason I did.
Was that a mistake? I mean,
No, not at all.
So I can cross that
no,
out.
No, no, there actually, what I do want to do is this is my first time I've spoken about Unmasking Obama publicly.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Thank you. When I was looking through my acknowledgments, I'm saying, oh my God, I forgot so and so. And then I said, oh great, I have Doug here. I've got him in the show. Thomas Lifson, publisher of American Thinker, forgive me for not putting you in acknowledgments. That was my oversight. Doug is here for a reason. What the book is about, see, I like to tell positive stories.
Okay.
And you're writing a book about Obama, and it sounds like it's going to be a dreary, negative, you know, slough through the, you know, the swamp of Obama's career. But something extraordinary happened during Obama's presidency we don't give ourselves enough credit for. And that is there emerged... I use the Russian term samizdat, which is the Russian term for like the underground publications that sustained the idea of freedom during the Soviet tyranny. Mm-hmm. You know, so books even like Dr. Zhivago were published by the samizdat underground and smuggled out. And even, you know, obviously the Gulag Archipelago and other works by Solzhenitsyn and also Everyday News. But in America, we have evolved our own samizdat, an American samizdat, which is really the alternative conservative media. And it's a combination of blogs, of talk radio, of independent judicial things like Judicial Watch,
yep,
and various other contributors to telling the truth. And during the Obama administration, and this was really unprecedented, Bill Clinton even didn't have this level of protection. You had, for 8 years, you had the major media working as hard as they could to suppress every story that reflected badly on that administration. And were it not for the samizdat, we would not know any of it. And so, you know, I have people, you know, we both talk to people who are discouraged about the turn of events in this world.
Sure.
And they say, well, yeah, but Obama got away with it. No, he didn't. Donald Trump was elected president in 2016 entirely because of the samizdat. During his term in office, Obama lost, what, 13 governorships, 850 House seats? I have the numbers there.
Yeah,
someplace.
I think I copied the numbers down, but go ahead, because it's – and by the way, that was the first time I ever heard the term samizdat. I just want to tell you that. So I felt pretty uneducated.
I read a lot of Russian stuff. I just, you know, I'm an anti-communist conspiracy guy.
But yeah, he lost. There was, in your book, you point out where, and I thought I had it written down here, but he lost a lot of seats.
A lot of control of a lot of states.
Yeah.
And those off-year elections, 2010, 2014, devastating for the Democratic Party.
Yep.
And then in 2016, you know, and here we go. We're coming to the election in 2016. Obama's being pronounced as having had a scandal-free 8 years. And in the major media, they believe that. You know, Hillary Clinton, his appointed successor, will protect all the Obama secrets, which she certainly would have done because she's involved in them. They're coming out now. And it's the continuation of the Obama legacy, but it wasn't. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, and here's the David and Goliathness of this story. On the one side, look, think about what they have lined up. Every single major newspaper in the country editorialized on behalf of Hillary Clinton. Every single one. All the major publications, such as they are, the New York Times, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, all the big newspapers, all of Hollywood, all of social media,
yep,
the majors, all of Broadway, if that matters. And so they get up that morning, November 8th, 99% chance Hillary's going to win. They've got the balloons ready at the Javits Center.
Yeah.
And they lose because for 8 years they ignored what people like you were doing, Doug. They ignored what people like I were doing and Susan was doing. They didn't even know we existed. But we knew we existed. And what I wanted to use to do the book was to celebrate With there's one blogger, his name's Mike Vanderbo. I love his term, and I used it a couple times in the book. He describes this as a good way of thinking of the samizdat as a coalition of willing Lilliputians, right?
Yep.
And we beat Gulliver, and Gulliver was shocked. And Gulliver is still shocked. And Gulliver, of course, is much bigger than we are and will maybe stomp us one day. But in the meantime, we're going to make life hell for him.
You know, all of that. When I saw that, and I saw the names that surrounded mine, you know, Colin Flaherty and others, Peter Schweitzer. I can go through the list, but you know, I'm thinking, my goodness, I don't belong there. But you're right. This is the we are, I guess, the warriors. So thank you, and thank you for acknowledging that.
And your audience is too. I mean,
that's true.
Everyone in your audience who like copies this, you know, the link and forwards it on is participating in the samizdat.
That's right.
I mean, it may be influencing 5, 10, 20, 100 people. But we all influence little groups of people. None of us has a huge mass audience. There is no, other than Fox News, which is dubious, there is no major conservative publication. This was all done from above, from below, pushing up, you know?
Truly organic, I do suspect, and everyone doing their own, you know, pulling their own weight and more among the unsung heroes. The unsung warriors, as you put them, of the samizdat. Yeah, it's great. So I guess my question before we get into the book itself, by the way, the book by Jack Cashel, folks, is Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. There it is on your screen. It's going to be available August 18th. So please do yourself a favor and get a copy of this.
And pre-order it right
pre-order.
Now.
Pre-order. Yeah, you can do that right now, right?
Right, yeah, on Amazon, sure. Yeah.
Okay, so go to Amazon, pre-order this. When you read it, yeah, it's going to be worth your time. I guarantee you. You're going to be learning a lot. I forgot where I was going with that, except to say that I think that, let me ask you this. That day in November of 2016, when you saw the left losing their collective minds, yeah, and screaming at the sky. Did we squander the last 3.5 years? I'm kind of drifting away from the book just for a second to ask your opinion. And have we done enough over this 4 years to maintain or retain the presidency on this, do you think?
I think the samizdat has been working overtime to protect the presidency.
Okay.
You know, we have no support. We have the White House. And, you know, I'm one of those people, or a lot of us who were, who voted for Trump somewhat hesitantly because I favored Cruz in the primary. I thought he was more consistent conservative. But I think Trump's been a pleasant surprise and working under extraordinarily difficult circumstances. And keeping the faith. I mean, he's gotten, you know, when he was a dilettante. When he comes into the White House, he's, you know, we don't know what kind of Supreme Court justice he's going to.
Right.
We're used to presidents who, after the last few weeks of nonsense, would go give their speech not at Mount Rushmore, but at the, you know, at the Harriet Tubman exhibit or something and beg and take a knee. But that's not Donald Trump. And, that's why the media hate him. And that's why I think he's going to be reelected in 2020.
Okay. And you know, after reading the book and weighing things and looking at those previous 8 years before Donald Trump and then looking at the 4 years of Donald Trump, I do think that we have, as I guess people refer to it as his base. I think that we can pull off or we can, I think he will be reelected. I'm not going to say it's in the bag, but I think that we have reason to be optimistic. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of pick your brain on that. But so getting back to the book, as I said, Unmasking Obama, folks, pre-order it at Amazon. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. There it is right there, Kindle and hardcover, available for pre-ordering. Do it now. Do it right now. Well, wait until after the show, but do it. That's Jack Cashel, Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. All right, where do we start? Beyond this, because I noticed in how you wrote the book, I thought was extraordinary. You have different you have it broken down into different fronts. And remember, folks, Obama, the most scandal-free presidency, right? Yeah, not so much. So where do you want to start? I mean, there's...
Well, you know, maybe I'll talk about the notion of what the fronts are and how that works. On the right, what unites us is a belief in a set of core principles.
Right.
You know, we all know what they are, limited constitutional government. We all have an elevator speech we could easily deliver in 30 seconds. On the left, not so. On the left, you have a coalition of partners, an uneasy coalition, who are united only in their hatred of the patriarchy, of conservatism, of God, of America. I mean, really, that's about all that holds them together. As I mentioned in the book, and I give it the most attention, and it certainly came to surface in the last month, is the Black Front is the most powerful, morally powerful, most frightening, and the one that has the potential to shake things up the most. And that was proven. Antifa on its own is a joke, right?
Yeah.
Antifa wielding wedding its power to the Black Front becomes now part of a coalition that has some force. What it's interesting to note, for instance, I was just on their website the other day for a project I'm working on, is like Planned Parenthood and they roll totally in on this thing, you know?
Right.
And what's curious, of course, is the Black Lives Matter people don't seem to mind the 1,000 black children a day being killed in abortion clinics. I mean, it's not even on their agenda. They're allies. They're allies with the Islamic Front, which makes no sense.
Yeah, I never understood that.
But they have a shared goal, and that is to bring down, patriotic, conservative, constitutional, Christian, Judeo-Christian America. I also have in there the Rainbow Front, which is the Gay Alliance, and they're fringe players in this. But sometimes, they have a certain power among the young that is frightening. And they're not all, I would say the Rainbow Front is the one that is the least wed to the whole larger movement. They might split off. Same thing with the Brown Front, that I use that as the Hispanic Front. The political part of it, of course, is totally in. They're totally playing this intersectional game. They're all part of, they're all marginalized. They all share the same oppression. They all have the same enemy. That's what keeps them together. And then I have the Red Front, which is the Communist Front and Socialist Front. That'd be Antifa. What else do I have in here?
You've got, first of all, the Home Front.
Which is just discussing Obama's background, right?
Right. And Susan Daniels had done a lot about it, by the way.
She gets in. She's in my book, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely she is. And happy birthday, Susan. I'm ashamed that I did not wish you a happy birthday before. Okay. So the Home Front, the Red Front, the Black Front, the Rainbow Front, the Brown Front, the Green Front.
The Green Front, of course, yeah. The Green Front is, what they did is certainly during Obama's years is they wedded themselves to the Black Front to give themselves a little moral clout.
Mm-hmm.
This environmental justice stuff. And they're working together. If Obama had one virtue from the perspective of the left, not from our perspective, is that he managed to keep all the various fronts at peace, right?
Okay.
And he helped them see their common enemy, to understand that they're all in this together.
Right.
The movement leaders, the individuals in the movements may have real goals. Movement leaders have only one goal, and that is to seize power. The founders of Black Lives Matter are all Marxists.
Right.
The founders of the leaders of the environmental movement are Marxists.
Yep.
We're watching an attempt at a Marxist coup on America. It will not succeed, but it may get interesting before it fails.
Well, okay. And one thing I got from the book, and again, the book is Unmasking Obama. Folks, go to Amazon, pre-order it right now. That's Amazon. Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. Jack Cashel wrote the book. Excuse me. It's really it's a fantastic read. And I think it kind of explains where we are right now, or why we are where we are right now. And that's, the fundamental transformation of America. He said, we're days away from that. And of course, that was as he was entering the White House. And what are we seeing today? You're seeing the emerging, I guess, in my view anyway, of the Black Front, the Rainbow Front, the green and brown and pink and crescent on the streets every day, burning America down. or trying to, you know, seize power, as you said.
Well, yeah, right now you see, what's interesting is the imbalance now. If you, intersectionality was the buzzword for the Obama years. And basically that means that all these various groups have a shared interest, and that is they're all marginalized, they're all oppressed, and their shared interest is to overthrow their oppressors and to seize power. So you look at, for instance, I just watched a Black Lives Matter, their main little video thing. And, okay, let's go back to, say, Colin Kaepernick, for instance, 49ers quarterback.
Sure.
He's being benched because he's playing badly despite his great talents. As a white mother raised by a white Christian family, he falls in with some Bay Area Marxists. If he had been in Kansas City, he'd probably be like, you know, a poster guy for all the right things. He had Bible verses on his tattooed on his arm. But he does. He actually falls in with Bay Area Marxists. And he starts, first of all, he just sits down during the national anthem, I think because he's angry because he wasn't starting. And then the next time, someone probably whispers in his ear, take a knee, make it seem like it's principled, and he does. Think about this. This is in the eighth year of the Obama presidency.
Right.
After 8 years of a black president, after 8 years of a black attorney general, after 8 years of having a Democratic mayor run every major police force in the nation, you're angry at whom, right? So Black Lives Matter in their video makes the enemy white supremacy. And because it's a vote video, it's a get out and vote video. And the vote is, they don't mention Trump by name, but they're saying we have to remove the white supremacists from positions of power, you know? So in other words, it is, in a sense, it's like what the Arab nations did to Israel. It allows them to focus their anger on someplace other than their own failures. So we can overlook the fact that we've run these cities into the ground.
Right.
And you must be as amazed as I am to watch the mayors of these cities and the citizens of these cities allow their cities to be destroyed, and they're still applauding them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, look, I can't explain this phenomenon. I'd like to, but except to ascribe it to a certain level of, insular insanity or insanity, period. I mean, how is it that the mayor of Minneapolis, let me ask you this, can advocate the actions of the rioters, of the people destroying the city? I mean,
yeah.
And then defunding the police, I don't get it. But I look, when I take your book, and this is not really a sales pitch as much as it is an observation, but when I take your book and I go through all of the different fronts, as I mentioned, and I compare it to what's happening today, I think what's happening today is the result of 8 years plus of real hard moving, combining forces. This isn't organic, and this isn't by accident.
The George Floyd stuff, George Floyd could have been anyone.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, I was thinking about this because when that Georgia, Brunswick, Georgia case came up, Ahmaud Arbery, I believe his name is. Remember this one? He shot by a white guy with a shotgun.
Okay. Yep.
And then they get, you know, they didn't green light that one, right?
Right.
Someone had to flick that switch. You know, like in Hollywood, that term green light is we're making this movie.
Yep.
They decided that we're going to make the Minneapolis movie. They waited, right? And then they sold it, as propagandists, it's hard to argue with their success.
Right.
And they intimidated people with the fear factor. And Antifa, you know, they had pallets of bricks waiting in all these major cities, including Kansas City. In Kansas City, fortunately, ours was relatively controlled. But, I talked to a cop. He said, I saw someone writing checks. I saw someone writing checks and handing them out to white agitators, you know. I talked to people who had offices. I'm only a half mile from the center where the agitation was, but they had a couple thousand people out.
Right.
But the police did a good job of corralling them. And they said, my parking lot is filled with out-of-state license plates. Right?
Right.
This was planned. I don't believe the George Floyd. I believe George Floyd did die. I don't believe he's a crisis actor or anything like that. But he could have been any other incident. They were just waiting for an incident. And George Floyd hardly makes for a poster boy. He's not exactly the poster boy you want.
No.
But they can only have so many Trayvon Martins. And, and Trayvon Martin wasn't the poster boy they wanted either, but they didn't let us know that. Or Michael Brown. He wasn't the poster boy they wanted either.
Well, none of these were.
None of them were. But they managed to suppress in those cases, partly because the first two weren't captured on video. And which is interesting because when the I'm digressing a little bit, but when George Zimmerman was first brought into the police station for questioning, the cops were trying to, confuse him a little bit. And they said, hey, we have this captured on video. And he goes, I pray to God that you do. Right?
Yeah.
Yep. But that is, they didn't have that. And the story was, doesn't, we'll talk more about that later.
Oh, yeah. And Eric the Tech, by the way, on HagmanReport.com is the link, or is actually the link to the video of the Trayvon Martin hoax. Just to give you a heads up there. Yeah, we got to talk about that because that's phenomenal investigative work done by Joel Gilbert. Okay. Yeah. So in Kansas City, you had a police officer
and tell the pallets of bricks were pre-delivered. Yeah.
Right. So how is it, and I got to ask you this, how is it that the left can organize so damn quickly and the right can't even, the conservative base, or the conservatives, in my view, can't even get off of first base? How is that possible?
And it's just the nature of the way we are. They do everything wholesale. They bust, they vote wholesale, They arrange for rallies because their people are either professional agitators or they are students or student-like people or they're unemployed.
Okay.
They're easily corralled. I mean, literally, they are easy to gather. They're easy to deliver. And they have the full blast of all the media telling them that what they're doing is right, No one dared, even on Fox, to stand up and say, I'm not making a saint out of George Floyd. I'm sorry,
Right.
No one had the nerve to deconstruct George Floyd. Let's face it, it did look bad, and it probably was bad, but, I'll leave that for George to decide. But they so scared and intimidated the responsible right into silence. And on the Arsami's dot, the truth was being told and told being shared. I mean, I see a video every day. I mean, two videos, five videos, you do too, that tell the truth of what's happening. I don't know anyone in my network who said, oh gosh, I'm going to take a knee now. I don't know that person,
Now, neither.
I don't know that. I know people on TV who take a knee, but no sane person in our world has taken a knee. We can't mobilize that quickly because we simply are. Plus, we're individuals. We have to be retailed, right?
Yeah.
So when it comes to people talk about revolution, they can get all their army out there right away, holding guns sideways and shooting guns they never shot before. And you don't want to mess with our guys. But they're not going to go riot. They're not going to go into the streets. They're not going to go risk everything they have. They're not going to attack symbols of authority. But they're waiting. If you come to their neighborhoods, you're going to be in for a surprise.
Right.
And they know that. I think the left knows that. The left knows that they made a huge mistake in disarming,
Interesting. It's something you said earlier, and you said responsible right. I found the initial part of the book very interesting, by the way. You document some resistance from the right to bring out again. We're talking about Unmasking Obama, folks. The book, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency, written by Jack Cashel. It's available on Amazon for pre-order. It's officially coming out on the 18th of August. Please, folks, get yourself a copy. You will not be disappointed. But resistance by people on our own side.
And that is, and I use the term responsible right somewhat ironically.
Right.
And I refer here, it's a very narrow group of people, the George Wills of the world, the Peggy Noonans of the world, the William Crystals of the world, the Bush family, the Fox News to a certain degree. Tucker Carlson's really standing out. I got to give him credit because that's he didn't have to be that way. The Washington Times, New York Post. We don't have much in the way of media. There is the National Review, the Weekly Standard before its demise, you know. Many of our elected leaders, they are very cautious. Some of them are cowardly. Some of them are, you know, timid to the point of absurdity. But I ran into that, you know, and I tell my own story in here about when I discovered in 2008 that Bill Ayers played a major role in the writing of Dreams for My Father. And my proof was, I mean, it was 99% solid. I did it just through literary forensic works, almost accidentally. I had no experience in this field other than I have a literary background. And then I do a lot of collaborative writing, so I know what that's about. And yet, I ran into a wall. This is where I got to give WND credit for first publishing this. And then when I looked around, and I was talking to my agent at the time, I said, I need a respectable conservative publication, and I need a lot of words because I have to, it takes me a while to make my case.
Sure.
You know, word matches, you know, parallel sequences, parallel stories. Couldn't find one. I got turned down by National Review, Weekly Standard, even American Spectator, you know? And so finally, and this is where I really failed to give American Thinker credit because they stepped up. I needed a place to give me 3,500 words to make my case. And that made a hit. Rush Limbaugh talked about it that day on the air, right? This was, the 6th of October, a month before the at least 4 weeks before the November election in 2008.
Okay.
I could still have, this story could have turned the election. The left knew it. They acknowledged as much. As David Remnick, an Obama fanboy and a biographer, says, if this thesis were true or enough people believed it to be true, it could have turned the election.
I got to tell you, it hurt me to read. When I read that and the knowledge that this could have prevented an Obama presidency, and then looking at the people who declined to print your investigative research, I'm thinking, my goodness, you know.
And when I'm talking, I'm saying, these just look, do it yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. It's all in the text, you know. The one guy who does stand up is Andy McCarthy.
Right.
National Review. And he gets hammered.
Yeah.
Because he's working for a responsible publication, you know, and a responsible publication has nothing, wants nothing to do with it. And the National Review would have nothing to do with my Flight 800 book either in 2016.
No, that figures, but okay.
And even though the publisher went to my high school, as did Anthony Fauci, of all people.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So at least I got a half-hour phone conversation with him, you know, and we could talk about it. But because that could have... Hillary was totally involved in that. Come on, guys.
Right.
Give me a break here. No. That's the way it works. And my story is just one out of 50. And I tell other, I know what I really like about writing this book is that I get to tell stories of heroic actions by people who are risking their careers, their safety, to tell true stories that the major media will at every point not only ignore, but if they get close enough, they'll attack. And,
yes.
As one of my heroines in the book, Cheryl Atkinson, discovers, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was just amazed, though, when in my notes here, I'm looking at this, biographer Christopher Anderson confirmed, for example, Ayers' involvement in his Obama-friendly 2009 book, Barack and Michelle, Portrait of American Marriage. Okay, so... Anyway, you did the linguistic forensic analysis of Dreams for My Father.
Right.
Okay. Even President Trump, by the way, got on Sean Hannity.
Right.
Saying,
and talked about it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's because as I start the book with, Michael Cohen calls me out of the blue.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of surprised when I read that.
Yeah.
I was telling my wife that I said, you got to read this book. And I said, Michael Cohen called Jack Cashel.
And she said, this was in 2011.
2011.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
When Obama was talking about the birth certificate, I said to Cohen, I said, you know, I don't know much about the birth certificate. I really don't. I have my own speculations like other people do. But what I do know about and what I can prove is that Bill Ayers helped Barack Obama write Dreams from My Father. And then Trump, bless his heart, goes on Sean Hannity that night and talks about it.
You know? Yep. And so that could have tanked, or that could have stopped Barack Hussein Obama. And I do use his full name to be correct. And, of course, Susan Daniels, very up. She was at the forefront of the constitutional eligibility issue on the birth certificate, as well as the constitutional eligibility of that. Let me go back
to your Christopher Anderson.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because that's a very good point, Doug. Christopher Anderson's a mainstream biography. They're all big bestsellers. Everyone reviews his books. They're celebrity bios.
Right.
And he goes in, he spends 6 pages on how he has sources now. I didn't have sources in Hyde Park. I was just doing it, as you said, through sort of linguistic forensics. He has real sources, and they confirm my thesis. I never talked to Christopher Anderson. So he didn't call me for this. This is something he came to on his own. I don't think he realized what hot water he was walking into. But I read at least 50 reviews of Anderson's book, and not a single one of them mentions its most newsworthy element, right? He goes on with Chris Matthews on Hardball. And Chris Matthews interviews him, says, "Boy, you got a real winner here. You're on a real winning streak here."
Yep.
Now, there's a great chance that Matthews never read the book. That's typical.
Which, yeah, I mean, maybe someone, maybe his staff did.
A staffer had to have.
Right, right. So, yeah.
And the staffer ignores it.
Right.
You can't believe there's so much groupthink, but there is, until you run into it, you know? They don't even have to be told. They know.
So we get Obama. And you know, for the most scandal-free presidency, Jack, my goodness, you point out a lot of things. And folks, you remember, too, about the Affordable Care Act, Gruber. You point out
that's kind of a neat story about the finding of that. And this is pure Sam's thought. And yeah. I would encourage your viewers your listeners.
I didn't know how that came about.
What I did is I traced all these things back to their roots. How did these stories start? And this is kind of fun. It was like detective work.
Right.
And in this case, it becomes a minor scandal when Jonathan Gruber, if you recall, this video surfaces of Jonathan Gruber, who is like one of the principal architects of Obamacare, saying at a little confab at MIT or someplace, just now he's bragging because Obamacare has been passed. You know, it's all history. Yeah, he goes, you know, we wouldn't have been able to pass this if it weren't for the stupidity of the American people, you know? And that was a powerful enough bit of video to crack the major media, Praetorian guard around the White House. Then I said, where did that video come from? You know? How did that video surface?
And just to be clear, his exact words were, and this is from your book, folks, listen to this, remember this, lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. So you talk about an insult to the American voter, but basically that was really, really critical for the thing to pass.
Right.
That was Jonathan Gruber.
Yeah, Jonathan Gruber. And he was got paid $400,000 for 1 year's worth of work to put that together.
I said, I'm sure just
I'd have taken that job and they give it to me. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure, you'd probably have to take a pay cut, right?
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. So I said, how did that surface? You know? Because it was major. It had a major ripple effect on the Obama presidency.
Yep.
And so then I went back and I traced it all the way back. And I find out that there's a guy, he's a financial advisor, you know, middle class guy living in suburban Philadelphia. He doesn't even know he's in his book yet. He doesn't know what he's going to be talked about right now. But he's one of my little heroes, one of the Lilliputians who did his job. His name's Rich Weinstein. No relation to Harvey. That's an unfortunate name, but now, you know, at the time it was probably pretty respectable. He's heard Obama say this time and time again. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Want your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. And even though he was politically kind of neutral, he doesn't have any political bias that I know of, he believed him because he said it so often and with such conviction.
Yep.
And then he gets an email and says, sorry, you've lost your health care plan, right? And he's saying, and he looks at the alternatives and it's going to double his premiums, you know, because he's self-employed and he's got kids in college. And he says, how did this happen?
Yeah.
How did this happen? And so then he starts just – his two tools that he used in his were Google and YouTube, right? So he starts Googling architects, you know, Obamacare. And he finds a couple of people, Jonathan Gruber being one. Then he goes on YouTube and starts looking for Jonathan Gruber, right? Mm-hmm. And then he stumbles on this video, you know, that had otherwise sat there obscurely.
Right.
And then being, you know, probably a good, right, probably a liberal, I don't know. He goes to the New York Times, right, with the video. And New York Times says, not interested, right?
Nice. What a surprise.
And then he's at a conference and he talks to people at the Cato Institute. And they say a libertarian think tank. And then mm-hmm. the Cato Institute put him in touch with some other people. And next thing you know, it's on YouTube, right? The video has been uploaded and it's getting attention. And then it goes, of course, viral. That's the Samizdat. This is a pure Samizdat operation.
Mm.
It had no help at all from above. In fact, the major media tried to suppress it, you know. I don't know if Weinstein ran into this, but I talk about another class of people here I might as well identify now. I call them the firemen.
Yes.
And this is a reference to, because I've run into these people. You probably run into them as well.
Yep.
And the allusion is to Ray Bradbury's book, Fahrenheit 451. It's sort of classic science fiction thing.
Yep.
And by the way, Bradbury turns right later in his life, ends up conservative, as many people do, you know. So,
wait a second. Just to be clear, Bradbury wrote Fahrenheit 451. That was in 1951.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
And 451 is the temperature at which paper burns.
Right.
And the firemen in this futuristic world, their assignment is to burn paper, is to burn books, because books contain information that is harmful to the state, is harmful to the narrative being put out by the central power. And so, and there's one scene in the book where the one woman says to another fellow, a guy who's questioning his role as a fireman, she says, you know, I thought I read someplace that in the past firemen used to put out fires, you know. And he said, no, firemen, we burn books, basically, and are very proud of it. Well, the firemen is the second class of media on the left.
Right.
And they consist of their bloggers. They're people like they're equivalents of yours, like the Young Turks, those kind of talk shows. But they have a lot of money and a lot of power, you know? I mean, you know, BuzzFeed is worth $1.5 billion, right? they're being funded at a high level. Media Matters for America has like 100 staffers. Media Matters for America is the classic fireman group. And what they do is, you know, if you're beginning to gain a certain profile in the media on the right,
yeah,
and the major media is ignoring you because that's their role, right?
Right.
The Media Matters people, or some of these people come and go, Think Progress, Fox, whatever.
Yep.
Their job, they'll assign a case officer to you, whose job is to go after you and to find anything you might have said that might have been, incriminating in the past, or any kind of weak link in your history, your personal history, any skeletons you have in your closet.
Oh, really?
You're the reporter. You could be a blogger.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're seeing items about you being a friend of David Duke, or having had an affair, or something. And you're being paid well to do this. Right?
You don't say. Now, wait a second. You're telling me that Media Matters, for example, will assign a case officer, you know, or a case person to you, to me, in order to take me or you down based on, something in the past, maybe that...
If our profile's high enough.
If your profile's high, okay, all right.
It may be high momentarily, and in which case, you know, you'll be assigned the person to make sure that anything that's incriminating about you can be found, they'll find. You know, wow. And they'll spread. And see, so folks, it's the risk you run when you enter into this world.
And I was kind of half joking, and I did read that in your in the book, of course, about that. But yeah, and I was half joking that, you know, say it ain't so. See, it can't happen, but boy,
and
it does.
And the difference on their side and our side is their firemen are in bed with the major media, occasionally, literally.
Right.
And But they, I talk about in there about the journalist.
I saw that. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. I think, remember that journalist? Journalist.
Right.
Go ahead.
In which, you know, the major media and the alternative media bloggers on the left collaborated, sharing ideas. And it's how they got those talking points out immediately. And they're all saying exactly the same thing. And, you know, we see, you know, Rush do that all the time.
He'll yep.
say how they're using the exact same words. It's because they've been conspiring, literally. We're on the right, we don't do that. Our responsible media don't want to talk to us. You know?
Well, okay. Now, is, by the way, journalist, journalist, is that still in?
No, it lasted for a couple of years until they got publicity.
Okay.
Someone made the mistake of writing about it in Politico.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it was sub rosa, it was fine. But the kid who started is like 22. We did Ezra Klein.
Yeah.
Immediately went to, took a job at the Washington Post, you know?
Go figure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they move, for them, it's a stepping stone. The blogs and the Think Progresses and the Media Matters and the, you know, the Politicos and whatnot up to the major media. For us, it's a, if the fact that I write for WorldNet Daily or American Thinker is not only is it not a stepping stone, it's like a blot on my resume, you know? If I'm on a Hagman, oh, he's on a Hagman report.
Holy yeah. crap. Well, first of all, you know, we, according to most, you know, who the hell are we?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. But we're really, folks, by the way, Jack Cashel is my in-studio guest, and I thank him and Susan Daniels. Happy birthday, Susan Daniels, extraordinary PI, and Mr. Privateer for being in the studio as well. But the book is Unmasking Obama. And please, folks, order it, advance order. It's coming out the 18th of August. It's the fight to tell the true story of a failed presidency. And I think what I got out of this the most is that each one of us, you know how you and I, folks, are, especially on the if you're listening to this program, you kind of feel, oh, I don't know, underappreciated, unappreciated. Like, oh, what the heck can we do? Are we making a difference? Well, Jack Cashel, in fact, says, yeah, we are part of that group that has really made the difference. And whether you know it or not, you're appreciated. So, and I appreciate you, Jack, for really pointing that out.
Yeah.
And I never saw it in print like that. And I'm not blowing smoke up your skirt. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm thinking, man, you know, you got a point.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, when I'm surprised that no one has coined this term before. You know, that I know of, and has diagnosed the nature of the media battlefield today. You know, in fact, yeah. Obama. You know, the book is about Obama, but he's the battlefield.
That's right.
The story is the fight between us and them. Us being the Samizdat, the alternative conservative media, and the left media, that is everything else, you know.
Right. Right.
And in terms of money and resources, their advantage is overwhelming.
Yes.
So you can imagine how shocked they had to have been, 4 years ago on that November night, you know.
I'm looking forward to the shock and surprise, this November as well. You know, I was reading a left-leaning, well, not a left-leaning, but a leftist forum, a Democratic Underground. I don't know if you're
yeah,
familiar
sure.
with that.
Yeah, sure. Right.
The comments there, another 4 years of Trump, I'll either move or commit suicide.
Well.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, I'd rather you move.
I'm reading this. I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. I mean, the visceral hatred they have for Donald Trump is just, to me, off the charts. Like,
it's totally, and I have family members who are infected with this disease, you know, and that combined with the COVID shutdown allowed it to fester and nurture, you know, and metastasize quickly. I don't know what to do with it. I mean, all families face this now, you know.
Yeah. I think, and to me, looking back on this, because I read where, well, Donald Trump he's a great divider. He's the one responsible for where we're at, you know, the ideological divide and exacerbating that. No, I think, and you point this out in your book, Unmasking Obama, I think you make a case where Obama did that.
Yes, he did. For 8 years, and no one in the media dared challenge him. You know, he did it subtly. You know, he had to do it. You know, he was pretty clever in that regard, pretty crafty. He was not the kind of guy to come out and say, occasionally he did, and he knew – he would pull back, you know. He did on several occasions where he said something that was that showed his hand. You know, there was what they call them Kinsley gaffes, you know, where you accidentally say what you mean.
Whoops.
Like you said to Joe the Plumber, for instance.
Yep.
And here's a classic, because I talk about Joe the Plumber. Joe the Plumber, you remember this story, of course.
Yep.
This is in 2008. He's just a plumber in a line in Ohio somewhere. And Obama's there, you know, trying to make believe he's a member of the working class. And then Joe just says, ask him a question. He goes, hey, what are you going to do with my taxes now? Are you going to raise my taxes or what? Mm-hmm. What, you know? And that's where Obama makes a Kinsley gaffe. He says, we have to spread the wealth around, right? And that got a lot of attention. So what does the New York Times do? It goes after Joe the Plumber.
Right? Of course.
And there are articles the next day about how he doesn't really have a certified plumbing license, how he's owes back taxes. The New York Times is doing this. He's just a citizen asking a question, you know? And then they justify saying, well, yeah, but he's become an icon on the right, blah, blah, blah. So he deserves attention. That's crazy.
And this is America. This is America. Think about that. Oh, man. We got about 7-8 minutes before the top of the hour break. This book, folks, Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. To me, there's so much in this. Now, you think, well, I've heard just about everything there is to know about Obama. Yeah, you know, maybe. But the way it's presented and the way it's preserved is something I think it's very important. So here before the top of the hour, one thing when I was reading this book, The Pink Front. What did you mean by that?
I use pink. I'm just color coding for ease of memorability. But pink, I refer to the wall of pink that shows up on after the Inauguration Day.
That's
Washington.
Okay. All right. So, with respect to that, I'm not even sure how I can formulate this question. But when I saw that after the hats, the pink hats, and all this, I mean, I looked at that. I'm looking at a lot of people that I wouldn't expect to see within that group, and I'm looking at Black Lives Matter. Now, I'm making a leap here. Related protests. I'm looking at a lot of people I wouldn't expect to see in that group.
Right.
And then I'm seeing, would you mention the word intersectability?
Intersectionality.
Intersectionality, yeah.
It's a very unwieldy word. It's not a very good marketing word, you know.
What he said.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, so there's just a lot of play between these groups and from the pink front to the green to the brown to the rainbow. I don't know. I don't know if there's a question in there or not, Jack. But
let me talk about the pink front for a second, because we ask yourself, of all the groups, green, brown, from black, why is it the pink front is there on Inauguration Day? Why is it that they are dominating the stage?
Right.
And there's a simple answer.
Oh, do tell.
They booked those hotel rooms for Hillary's inauguration, right?
Oh, yeah.
They booked those hotel rooms in advance. And they probably had to pay for them. And now,
simple as that, right?
And now they say, well, what are we going to do now? We got thousands of us. We're in Washington. Well, let's put these stupid pink hats on and wander around and have a protest.
Let's knit some hats.
I mean, I am confident that that's how that started. I am totally confident that that's how that started.
Amazing.
Because, you know, they were 99% sure that they were going to need those hotel rooms, you know?
For the celebration.
Yeah, for the glass ceiling. The shattering of the glass ceiling. In fact, there's a book about, and this is, I'm convinced I'm right on this too. There was a really pretty good book about the Hillary campaign called Shattered.
Okay.
It's an inside book. It's not, it's more about the nuts and bolts of a campaign than the ideology, right? And it's called Shattered. I'm convinced they had the title, meaning shattered as in the glass ceiling.
In the glass ceiling, right.
And then they had a pivot. And make it shattered as in shattered hopes and dreams, you know.
Oh, man. Wow.
It's the world we live in, you know. It's all about branding.
Yeah, it blows my mind, that's for sure. Folks, again, and please, Unmasking Obama. You need to read the book. Why? Well, because it tells a story. It tells the true story, the fight to tell the true story of a failed presidency. Order it now. Order it right now. Order it tonight. Order it tomorrow. But just order it. Advance order it. It's coming out on the 18th of August, and it's a great read. It has so much into it. It has so much in it. So much, I'm sure, that you've forgotten. And it explains a lot as to what is going on today. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report, HagmannReportLive.com. That's where you can find our audio and video assets. That's HagmannReportLive.com, HagmannReport.com for everything else, for show notes and for articles, contributing articles and such. That's HagmannReport.com and HagmannReportLive.com. And don't forget HagmannReportStore.com for coffee. You want some coffee? I need some coffee. And coffee mugs. Hey, there it is. Jack likes a coffee. Never mind. Studio audience likes coffee. Gonna be right back. Stay right where you at. Jack Cashel is my guest. Unmasking Obama is the book.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Hagmann Report, where truth can't be silenced. Again, I am so excited to have with me Jack Cashel in studio, right here. In studio, in this undisclosed location. We've got security posted out back. We've got drone surveillance, just in case anyone does attack him. But talking about his book, Unmasking Obama. Folks, look on your screen. Unmasking Obama. And there it is, right there. The fight to tell the true story of a failed presidency. And what do you mean it's failed? What do you mean failed presidency? It wasn't failed. Failed presidency. Doggone it. You hear that clickety-clack? That's Lady, the studio dog, entering the studio. You haven't heard that in a while, have you?
She's a surveillance dog. She's that's here right. to protect us.
That's right.
Us,
you know? She's got a little GoPro camera on her head and stuff. No, I got to tell you, this book is fantastic. Jack Cashel is fantastic. By the way, I didn't mention this before. I haven't mentioned it in a while. TWA 800, you got to read this book, too. You got to read this book. Jack Cashel's book. I think I kind of was introduced to Jack by this book, as a result of this book. I'll just leave it. I'll put a period right there. Okay. All right.
You know, by the way, this is the first I've talked about unmasking Obama publicly. So it's I mentioned Doug in the acknowledgments, and he's surprised by that. But
yeah,
There are outposts of truth all around the country, and this is the ones who are celebrated in my book, and that's why I want to.
Well, this gives me hope. All right, this gives me hope because the word samizdat, I did not even know existed until you wrote your book on Masking Obama. Then I realized what it is. Then I realized we're all part of this fight. Every one of us, even you watching and posting on social media, even if you don't have a website, if you're just sharing the information, you're part of this group that's fighting the good fight. So hang in there and don't get discouraged.
Yeah.
All right. All right. And thank you for doing that.
No. It's in a failed presidency. Yeah. When your chosen successor loses, you failed.
Yeah.
When you lose 13 governorships and 800 something House seats or whatever, control of legislators all across the country, you failed.
That's right.
That's not to say you didn't make some headway, because they did. And, I don't want to – this is probably not worth belaboring here, but the one group that did best under Obama in the intersectional alliance were gays, And I kind of get into that. There's some secrets here, but, maybe I'll save those for the book.
Yeah, you got to read, folks. You got to get into this. We'll just put a period there, too, because, and you'll know, You can tell what we're talking about. Let me ask you a couple of things. And this, you ready? Media Matters. Not that you're watching this, okay? Because Let me ask you, Seth Rich.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that'll stop a conversation really quick on both sides.
It's odd because I start the book, and I did this as a sort of parallel. My first chapter is called Michael Cohen Calling, and I started the book with a phone call I get from Michael Cohen in 2011, just out of the blue, asking me what I know about Obama and birth certificate, partly because I sort of serve as a liaison between, I would say, the Samizdat, the underground conservative alternative media, and the major responsible conservative media. I mean, there's people up there who trust me and know me. Not everyone.
When you say the responsible versus the Samizdat, you're not really, just so people out there don't get the wrong idea, you're not insulting us, are you?
No, and I'm not totally insulting them because they are our allies, you know,
right.
And they do a lot of good work. It's just that they're timid.
Timid, okay.
And the National Review and set the standard for that of they want to get rid of the kooks. You know, that's the word that Rich Lowry uses. And a lot of us are kooks. And when you start, for instance, when I realized that Bill Ayers was the muse for Barack Obama, mm-hmm. I suddenly became a kook and a racist kook at that. So who wants to talk to you, you know?
Okay, all right.
I mean, so it has that liability. So I start the first chapter with a call from Michael Cohen. I start the final chapter called The Eastern Front with a call from Jerry Corsi.
Right.
Who is a classic, pretty high-profile member of the Samizdat.
Right.
You know? And I know Jerry going back, and, you know, we're both from New Jersey and whatnot. And he calls. He says, just like Cohen calls and says, what do you know about Barack Obama's birth certificate? Corsi calls, and I know at this time he's in the crosshairs of the Mueller investigation.
That's
I know
right.
this. My phone may be tapped or whatever. His phone may be, probably not mine. And he says, what do you know about Seth Rich?
That's a showstopper again.
Right.
Yeah.
And at that time, I answered him as I answered Michael Cohen. I said, I don't know more than anyone else knows. And then I said, maybe I ought to know more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I began I organized my final chapter, that is about Russia collusion and Ukraine and whatnot,
right.
around the Seth Rich story. Seth Rich, as most of your listeners would know, by the way, if you said Seth Rich to the average watcher of CNN, he probably doesn't even know who Seth Rich is. You know, there's a lot of things they don't know. They don't know who Frank Marshall Davis is. They don't know who, you know,
that's true.
Larry Sinclair is. I can tell you that, or a lot of other people. Seth Rich was a 27-year-old staffer. He worked in data analysis for the DNC in Washington at 4 a.m. on a Washington Street. He's gunned down, beaten up and gunned down, and left to die. He dies an hour or two later in a Washington hospital. The major media reported that.
Mm-hmm.
The local media reported that. Not the national media, the local D.C. media. Just, you know, it's newsworthy. He was
right.
The first guy to be murdered in that neighborhood in 10 years. You know, it wasn't like he was in the wrong part of town because I checked the real estate in that area. It's not the wrong part of town.
Right.
It's the right part of town. And it's 4 a.m. and it was unsolved. And
it
he
still
was,
is.
And the curious detail, it still is. And I'm writing, you know, 3 or 4 years later, if it's unsolved now, I had to figure, is it going to be unsolved by the time the book comes out? And I'm saying no, because the major media won't let it be solved. And it still isn't. But here is the curious detail, is that he's shot, and it's a botched robbery. Oh, yeah? Well, they really botched it because they didn't take his wallet, his cell phone, or his watch, or anything else he had on him.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
That's a botched robbery, right?
Yeah.
Now, this story might have sat, and no one might have paid much attention to it, but about maybe 2 weeks later, Julian Assange is being interviewed on Dutch TV, and he says, you know, our sources take risk. You look what happened to Seth Rich in Washington.
Whoops.
You know, right? And that cat, well, they want to try to stuff that cat back in the bag. You're not saying he was murdered. Says the Dutch guy who's part of
Right.
The major media worldwide, they're the same. Oh, no, you don't want to talk about this. No. But the cat was out of the bag. And then it became anyone, And it's remarkable what happens here. This is the real battle between the Samizdat and the major media and their acolytes, the firemen that I was talking about last hour, the people who go after you. Anyone who tried to investigate Seth Rich was being shut down, and up to all the way up to Fox News, yep. Threatened with lawsuits, sued in several cases, threatened in every which possible way, demeaned, humiliated.
Yep.
You were not allowed to investigate the death unsolved. I mean, we know he was murdered. It's not like he was like the Vince Foster case where they say it was a suicide. We know he was murdered in the streets of Washington.
Yep.
And but we weren't allowed to look into it.
Of course. And the mere mention of Seth Rich, like you said, I mean, it brought out the – you talk about visceral hatred for Donald Trump, the visceral reaction to the name Seth Rich. But so let me ask you, and again, this is all part – this actually is under the Eastern Front in the book Unmasking Obama, which is why you guys need to get this. So, okay, so the Seth Rich murder – it goes to the hack versus download of the DNC servers.
That's right.
Right.
Everything's at stake with this, right?
Yeah. So then, okay. So if there's no hack, there's no Russia. So if there's no hack, I mean, that changes
everything.
The entire story. Yeah, everything, right. And then, yes, yeah, so DNC, CrowdStrike, remember that, folks, and so on. So, yes, okay. So Seth Rich, but even his family, by the way. I understand. I mean, look, I don't know. Didn't his family sue a lot of people or sue people?
You know, originally, it's complicated. And this is why I take the information as far as I can. And what I do is I never take it beyond what I know. You know, I never confuse speculation with fact. But here's what we know. And this is where it gets interesting. There is a journalist on the left named Eileen Ratner.
Yes.
I wasn't particularly familiar with, but, she's sort of not real high level, but she shows up a lot on TV. And, you know, she's not hard left, but she's left enough. Her brother was hard left. He was Julian Assange's attorney, a guy named Michael Ratner.
Okay.
He died before this all happened, or that maybe even that summer, but it's not related. He was sick. But she meets with Julian Assange. Around this time, and I guess it would have been late 2016 after the election. And Julian Assange tells her that his sources were Seth Rich and his brother Aaron Rich. Right?
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
Now, she comes back and she's at a symposium at like, was it Emory University or someplace? Or, mm-hmm. This is right after the election. And not many people were paying attention. And that's when she first drops that bombshell. Just as an aside, there's a Republican ex-congressman sitting next to her. He doesn't even pick up on it. The host doesn't pick up on it. Actually, I should say she dropped this bombshell in two stages. The first is that she had talked to Assange and that he had confirmed the Rich story. And then she talks to this guy named Ed Bukowski.
Right.
And this is where Bukowski is now a full-fledged member of the Samizdat. Sometimes you get dragged into the Samizdat whether you want to or not, you know, and is paying for the price ever since. She tells him that it was Seth and Aaron Rich, that Julian Assange, Aaron Rich is Seth's brother, that were involved in extracting that information from the DNC. Right.
Really?
And now... Bukowski is the one. Then he, as he tells the story, and this is he tells the story under oath in a lawsuit. So, you know, if he's not telling the truth, I don't know who is. He approaches the parents, the Rich parents, who, by the way, are, you know, liberal Democrats.
Right.
And, you know, they're disinclined to, you know, to have their party smeared or whatever.
No, I understand.
But they have a dead son who's inexplicably dead.
Right.
And an unsolved case that the major media don't want anything to do with. They don't want to investigate. How? Think about this. You're in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You're a journalist. Someone who's implicated in the biggest scandal since Watergate is murdered on the street. It's unsolved. And you don't want to know about it, you know? Actually, I got to tell a little story here, just a little anecdote.
Sure.
some digression, but not. I live in Kansas City. And about 20-something years ago, you know, I'm sort of the executive editor of the regional business magazine. I'm a fairly respectable person there. Not elsewhere, not when I leave. But. And I run into the publisher of the Kansas City Star, who's one of my neighbors. And I'm wearing a hat that says U.S. Park Police. And so he says, what's with the Park Police hat, you know? And I said, this is in the 90s. I said, it's my Vince Foster memorial hat, you know? Half your audience will know this story. There's a lot of background to it. You know, Vince Foster dies in a park. Park Police mishandle the case, et cetera.
Of course.
Here's what the publisher does. He puts his hands on his ears, walks away saying, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
No, he didn't. No.
That's exactly what he did. He said to me, he proceeded with a question. He goes, you're not one of those people who think that Vince Foster was murdered, are you? I said, listen, I've been to Fort Marcy Park twice. I've investigated this case as closely as I can. Here's what I can say safely. He didn't die where they found him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he put his hands, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. You know,
I got to tell you, Jack, maybe we could have run into each other. I was at Fort Marcy Park twice myself.
Okay? You stopped to urinate.
Yeah, actually, I was me.
That's the story. All the guys get, buddy.
I was looking for a place to pee, so I walked like 100 yards. No, I was there twice. And in fact, I've got, I was a lot younger, you know, so I went to the side of the cannon.
Right, sure, right. You know, right, yeah. The berm.
You were the berm, right. And look, I don't know why I said that except to say I was there too. I've got a lot of problems with that.
Just a vague funny story here. And actually, if you can have a good time, you're doing this work, you really should have a good time.
Sure.
I mean, life's crazy, but we know that. I'm there one day, and I'm with John Clark, who is the attorney for the fellow who is the eyewitness, you know.
Oh.
And John's a funny guy. I don't know if you ever met him. But
no.
And, you know, we're having a much better time than we should have in Fort Marcy Park because it had snowed in Washington, and then it iced over on the snow. So we get to the berm, and we both had to slide down on our butts to get to the bottom. You can't walk on it, you know. So we're sliding. We're slip sliding down Vince Foster's memorial death site, you know, and laughing about it. I don't know. Forgive me, God. I don't know. It's not funny. I know, but sometimes you got to find the bright side.
But it's. How do we get talking about Vince Foster? Oh, your hats.
Yeah, right. Because they don't want to know, and it's shocking and appalling and disgraceful that they don't want to know about the legitimate murder, the undeniable murder of a person who's linked to the biggest scandal in recent years, perhaps all time in American history, and they don't want to know about it. But they don't want to know anything about Russia collusion.
Yeah, exactly. And that's and here we are.
And their readers are ignorant. Their listeners are ignorant. They don't know the names. Like, they probably don't know who George Papadopoulos is or Carter Page. These names, they have no resonance with them.
Who?
Yeah, right, exactly. let alone Stefan Halper or, you know, the
professor, yes.
Right, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Or John Brennan, who shows up everywhere in his book, you know?
Yeah, John Brennan.
Including Fast and Furious.
Let's talk about Fast and Furious because you talk about it in your book as well. And by the way, folks, Seth Rich name comes up in the book, Unmasking Obama. That's why you need to buy it as well. Advance order it. There it is on Amazon, Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. You know what? Do me a favor. I'd like to take credit for being able to get the word out there through this book. I don't know. Leave a review, I guess, or I don't know. Just tell other people
tell
about
your
it.
Friends, right?
Yeah, do me a favor.
Share the link. Right.
Share the link. That's what you know. What that's what you can do because we're all part of this movement. Let's talk about Fast and Furious.
Yeah, you know, and getting back to the denial, the willingness to ignore after the whole Fast and Furious thing breaks and becomes scandalous. Stephen Colbert on his show says laughingly, Fast and Furious is the biggest scandal I've never even had to talk about. You know? Okay, Stephen. Yeah. I mean, you just gave your game away, Stephen.
Right.
Who's not funny. I don't know how he has a show.
You know what? He reminds me of my former dentist. I don't like him at all. I associate him with a lot of pain and a lot of
money. And he's like the professed Catholic on. I'm sorry, I'm a Catholic. I don't believe in abortion. So think it over, Stephen. Think about your affiliations. But it's a beautiful story of the way this Samizdat works. That is our underground conservative media. In this case, Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent, is murdered by someone using a gun that will have come from this program in December 2010. The media have no interest in the story at all.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to know about an American Border Patrol agent being killed by a Mexican illegal, smuggling drugs. So the story sits idle, but the people in the Phoenix ATF office are fuming because they know what they've been have to participate in this bizarre program that basically we'll discuss in a second, letting guns run into Mexico unchecked,
yep,
unverified, and one of their own guys gets killed by it. So they talk to a couple of Second Amendment bloggers. One of them, Mike Vanderbo, is the guy who coined the term a coalition of willing Lilliputians. And then Media Matters went after him tooth and claw.
Really? Right?
He's a blogger. He's a Second Amendment blogger in Arizona. The other one was a fellow named Dan Kudria. I believe I'm pronouncing his name right. Yeah. They have the story. Then, and this is bless her heart, because she's in 8 years, she's the only one in the major media who had the courage to see that the stories were being missed by her peers. And she starts reporting them, which is why she's no longer in the major media. And that's Cheryl Atkison.
That's right.
And she does something that no one else in the major media would dare to do or bother to do. She starts talking to the Samizdat. She goes to these Second Amendment bloggers and says, what do you know about this story? And then they start developing the story. And then she goes on, does a 5-minute piece on Fast and Furious on CBS News, right?
Right.
And then she gets a call from the White House. Why are you talking about this? How dare you? No one else is. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, she's written 2 books. They're both essential reads to understand how this works.
I've got them both.
Of course, at that time, he was a national security. He was an advisor. He wasn't the CIA director. The true villain in this whole 8 years is John Brennan. He's the devil on Obama's shoulder. You know? I don't think there's an angel, but there is a devil on his shoulder telling him to do bad stuff. He's involved in Fast and Furious. He shows up at the ATF office in Phoenix. I don't know the depth of his involvement. He shows up in the WikiLeaks as the one who is directing the harassment against reporters, including Cheryl Atkison, who was famously harassed electronically.
In fact, she found spyware or something implanted on her.
Oh yeah, right. There's no hard drive. Even CBS, which investigated, verified that she had in fact been. They had infiltrated her electronics in every which way. But she reports on it. So the story is out there. It has come up fully from the ATF office to the Second Amendment bloggers, pushed up the chain to finally to CBS News. These stories always start down here.
Right.
And then, of course, then the suppression comes from the top. So Stephen Colbert can laugh it off a couple months later saying, you know, even though at least 2 Americans have been killed and hundreds of Mexicans have been killed by a program that had only one possible motive. And that was to let guns go into Mexico. The gun dealers in the Phoenix area were forced into this. They would used to report straw men when they came in to buy guns for Mexican. Now they said, no, don't report them. Let them buy their guns. Don't track them. Let them go. So the guns are going into, these are, you know, AR-15s, yep, et cetera. They're going into Mexico. They start showing up in, in these shootings. The only possible motive for this program, everyone involved, because they were going to use the ATF as a vehicle for gun control. Mm-hmm. And the ATF was, the rank and file were rejecting this. The top brass were doing whatever they had to do. And this was went all the way up the chain, was to, create incidents where the Mexican president could say, it's your guns that are killing us, which would give us a pretext to shut down on Second Amendment rights.
So this was all about, Fast and Furious was really all about taking away our Second Amendment rights.
Right. That's what it does.
In the story, that's what
there's no other logic for the program.
Okay.
And they never advanced the logic for the program.
All right.
Oh, you just let guns go into Mexico? If you were tracking them, the cartels, maybe. But you weren't going to get them on gun things.
I thought they were like marked or had something, you know.
They weren't even tracking them.
All right.
They weren't following them. And what they would, but they did know where they came from. So when if they showed up in a slaughter and then the Mexican president could go on air holding American guns,
right,
saying, you've got to do something on your side of the border, right? Because Obama was down here talking to the president of Mexico. I think it was Calderon at the time or whatever. But, and then it blew up in their faces.
Yep.
And then they just lied about it. And then, you know, then you, our friends on the left, people like on Facebook will say, well, what happened? There was no punishment. There was 8 investigations. 10 investigations about Benghazi, nothing happened. No. Well, I mean, for the first time, Obama had to call executive privilege. First time ever an attorney general was censored on the floor of the House, you know, Eric Holder.
Yep.
Yeah, who lied through his teeth at every instance.
Yep.
He claimed, Obama claimed to have learned about this in the media.
Yeah.
Right? Eric Holder claimed about it, learned about it 6 weeks ago when he'd have been talking about it 6 months ago. The program had been in effect for a year. In Mexico, yeah, they succeeded. Literally hundreds of people were killed with our guns, right?
Yep.
But they couldn't brag about it now or couldn't ask for a Second Amendment stuff because the Samizdat had blown this story up, right?
Right. Okay.
And Media Matters went after Mike Vanderbilt. They went after Katie Pavlich, who was semi-responsible writer. She wrote a good book on that. And she grew up in Arizona with a father who was a hunter. That's how she got involved, you know? So, but on the left, if you said to them Fast and Furious, they wouldn't know what that meant. They'd probably think it was the movie franchise after which it was named, you know?
Okay, that really, I mean, that's surprising. I guess I knew that, but, that surprises me. Have you heard? I mean, I'm sure anyone watching this program knows what Fast and Furious is. I just wonder how many of your friends do. If you have an answer to that, go ahead and put it in the comments section on YouTube. I'd like to know. I really would, just for my own benefit. But so, Agent Brian Terry loses his life over this over this program to take away our Second Amendment rights.
And it would have succeeded had it not been for guys like Mike Vanderbilt and Dan Kudrya at the ATF office, Jay Dobbins, who had been an undercover agent, really risky, bold guy, Vince Cefalu.
But how did they find it? How did they find out about this? In other words, what was that one morsel of information that's, wait a minute, look here.
It was the death of Brian Terry.
That's what did it.
Yeah. That's when they realized that this thing has no logic that is justifiable under any law and order thing. Its only logic is to use it as an example of why we should have to suspend certain Second Amendment rights.
Were there any other similar programs to Fast and Furious?
You know, there was, and this is again the deception of the major media.
Right.
Under the Bush program administration, there was some program that was technically vaguely similar, but had nothing. I mean, it was just nothing like this. So when Obama got up, he said, "Oh, we're just continuing the Bush program," and that's what all the left said, right?
Yep.
And it has nothing like it. Some. Oh, wait, we don't do any gun walking. Oh, blah, that was the Bush thing. Blah, blah, blah. You know, that sort of stuff. Everything started under the other administration. It's not your fault. And they got away with that because no one questions them. You know?
Sure. Sure. That's, wow.
Where were you on the night of Obama, of September 11, 2012, Barack Obama? No one ever asked him.
He
disappears. No one asked him where he was.
Let's talk about that if you don't mind, because I wrote extensively referencing Benghazi, the attack on the embassy. No, it wasn't an embassy. It was the
consulate.
No, it wasn't the consulate either. It was a it was a CIA outpost for weapons running. Compliments of Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Okay, so, where was Barack Hussein Obama?
Well, you know, and that's a big story. It's a bigger story than I can tell in the book. So what I do is I concentrate on the creation of the media answer, which is the video story, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Hillary's the one who announces that about 11 o'clock our time that night.
Yep.
That is an internet video that caused all the hubbub.
The innocence of Muslims.
Right. The innocence of Muslims. I've gotten to know the creator of that, Nikola Vasily Nikula. I get to, my wife is always astonished I'm getting calls. Oh, it was George Zimmerman, Nikola Vasily. I mean, all these people who are like these outcasts, find their way to me. Because it's only the Samis that's going to listen to them,
Exactly.
So, but that night, Obama disappears. No one knows where he was. Unlike, let's say, bin Laden, where he was allegedly sitting in that chair there, that was all. As Susan can talk about that as I'm fine.
Yeah, he was, what was it? Or wait a minute, that was Hillary.
Leaning forward there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But so, no one, it takes 6 months, literally, before finally Chris Wallace on his Fox Morning Show asks an Obama advisor, where was Obama that night?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, do you want a conspiracy theorist, Wallace can't get him the budge. He won't say.
Really?
But no one, the scandal is this. 6 months go by before anyone asks him, what were you doing that night? Where were you?
That's a good point.
What was your involvement in the creation of the video message, the blame it on the video message?
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, I go into the background of that, how that emerged. People like Cindy Blumenthal were involved and how they set that up, the video. What happens after that, it is Hillary who introduces the theme, right?
Right, right.
And then in the Rose Garden the next morning, and Obama's on the way to Las Vegas for a fundraiser,
mm-hmm.
While the smoke is still smoldering in Benghazi, that's where it gets involved with he's saying it was terror and not terror, but in the debate where that becomes an issue. I get into that, but it's too complicated here. But the question is, what happened? What did the media do about this video? Oh, here is someone. Here's a pure Samis, that guy. This guy who's making, he's a Coptic Christian, American citizen, not the, the best of citizens necessarily, but if you're a Coptic Christian in Egypt, it's like having been a Jew in Nazi Germany circa 1937, Your people are being killed here, a couple here, a couple there, shops being destroyed, et cetera, but the world isn't noticing yet. So you make a video to show the world what Islam is about.
Mm-hmm.
And, his video was disrespectful, but it wasn't untrue. I only saw the trailer. That's all anyone saw.
Right.
And the White House creates a story that it wasn't a planned attack on the consulate on September 11th by al-Qaeda forces. No. On September 11th, just curiosity, that happened. No, it was this video that prompted, that provoked the whole, Muslim world. And so our media joins the Justice Department in hunting down the video maker.
Right. Yep.
This is disgraceful.
Yep.
And they hunted him down so that they could, what they did is unsealed his indictment for a previous check-kiting scheme he was involved in. He had turned state's witness. That's why it was sealed, so to protect him from the ringleaders.
Yep.
They hunt him down. The media's there at the door saying, yes, this is his house. You can find him here, And then the Justice Department immediately comes in and rearrests him. And they have to arrest him on something.
Right.
And that is now unauthorized use of the internet, right? Because he's on probation.
And I think Ken Timmerman points.
Timmerman does a great job on this. Yeah,
right.
Right. He's one of my heroes in the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had about some months after this, I look up. I said, what happened in Nikula? And I find him in the Altoona prison in West Texas. So I send him a letter,
Wait a minute. Really? Okay. So when was this?
This was I sent him a letter about 3 months after he ends up back in prison.
All right.
And they imprison him in a federal prison in West Texas. They want him as far away from the media as possible.
Sure.
Not that the media's looking, but they want him as far away. I sent him a letter. I say, hey, Nikula, I'm just Jack Ashwell, blah, blah, blah. What do you, I just was curious what happened and, how are you doing, et cetera. Well, about 9 months after that, I remember this very well because I'm at my in-laws' house. And we're just sitting down at Christmas dinner, or maybe it's Thanksgiving dinner, one or the other. Thanksgiving. And I get this call, and it's from California, so I decided I'm going to ask. Like, yeah, just 1 second. Nakula, hang on. Hold the dinner for a few minutes, okay? It's Nakula calling me, and he says, and the first thing he says is, why didn't you answer my letters?
Really?
And I said, what letters?
Yeah.
I didn't get them. He sent them. I didn't get them. He says, you were the only one to contact me, right?
Oh.
The only one in the media to contact him. And the whole time he was in prison.
No one else was interested.
You
obviously.
Think like, someone would yeah, be interested in this
no
story?
Figure.
And when I, you know, in fact, when I wrote the 800 book, I said, why is it I? Well, how am I the one who's writing this book? Why didn't 50 mainstream reporters beat me to that book, you know? And that's the value of the Sami's thought. I'm sorry. You just, they don't want to know it. They leave, on the positive side, they leave all these big stories to us, you know?
And you know, so I was kind of involved in a sense in kind of at the periphery of the video itself. Giving credit where credit's due, a video, YouTube personality by the name of Monograph had traced the video from the Analysis Corporation, John Brennan.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
He did just a hell of a job. And I'm looking at this. I'm thinking, wait a minute. How is this even possible? And John Brennan kind of comes up in this. And when you said about the, you know, Brennan being on his shoulder, I'm thinking he's straddling his neck, you know, with his legs on
right.
his side.
And that goes back to his company, you know, about the passport scandal.
Well, and thank you for that. Yes, because that's right. Which there's a dead body in the wake there. Lieutenant Quarles Harris.
Yeah, right. Right.
Uh-huh.
And what threw everyone off was everyone thought he was a lieutenant of something, but it was his first name.
First name.
And it was misspelled. So they were so hard to track. You know? But he was killed.
Yeah.
And there's no explanation for it. And the streets of Washington, you know?
Yeah, kind of, you know, Seth Rich, can I say that name again? Hey, yeah. Media Matters. Or Right Wing Watch, even better. Yeah, so, oh my goodness. Okay, so all of this, which by the way, it's folks, it's in the book. It's in the book. If you could put it on the screen, that'd be great. There it is right there. Unmasking Obama, the fight to tell a true story of a failed presidency. Folks, you've really got to get the book. It really is one of those books that, yes, it's informational, but it will also, for those of us who are out there in the field, thank you, Jack, for writing this because it makes us, it gives us hope. It gives me hope that hey, you know what? What we do can make a difference and has made a difference.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, it is just ordinary people. I love to document their stories because some of these stories have never been told. Susan Daniels, who's here with us tonight, in fact, is
happy birthday, Susan.
Gets her own subchapter, right?
Because I love it.
Susan, who broke the story of Obama's birth certificate of his social security number.
Yes.
And it's Connecticut origins. And I, unlike other stories that the media dismiss, well, they ignore, I'm certainly they ignored this, but when the firemen, that is the people on the left who are the fact checkers and the Snopeses and the, you know, who are there to dismiss whatever stories do bring in and break through, even they had no explanation for it. The undeniable fact that Barack Obama has a Connecticut social security number.
That's
and
right.
you have to have Susan on the show sometime to talk more about that, but I don't want to step on her story, but it's a good story.
Yeah, she does a great job. In fact, when she came in, I said, you're responsible basically for starting all of that. So, I mean,
happy birthday. Again,
happy birthday. Yeah, right. Susan Daniels, a great PI out of Ohio. Hey, if you need a PI in Ohio, Susan Daniels. I'm telling you, happy birthday.
Now, let me pick up a story. We have Susan here and my friend Nin Privatera. The three of us last year, we went on a bizarre road trip. We drove upstate New York. You're in Erie, PA. We drove down to Washington, D.C. for the premiere of the Trayvon hoax.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, Susan and I had both consulted on that, so we had a kind of an interest in that. And I introduced Joel Gilbert, the filmmaker, to George Zimmerman, who's, you know, it's about. But you'll have to have Joel on because it's, he deserves his own show. He did a brilliant bit of detective work on this.
I loved it.
And if you haven't seen this, I'm going to plug it right here. And it's probably too involved for us to talk about. But the Trayvon Hoax, Unmasking the Witness Fraud that Divided America, it's for free now on YouTube.
And it's on. It's actually on HagmanReport.com. So if you can go to HagmanReport.com, it's right there. Just click the play button, and you're there.
So, but yeah, we had a fun road trip last time.
Dare I ask about the road trip? I mean,
well, what happened in Washington stays in Washington.
What happens? And that's
actually, I wish it would stay in Washington. You know.
What have we missed?
Let me talk about a little bit about the James O'Keefe and David DeLight and that undercover reporting.
Please.
This is pure Sami's thought. I've gotten to know James really pretty well. We've worked on some projects together, but he basically and Lila Rose also of Live Action involved with this, patenting the undercover investigation. It had been done by major media in years past, but they dropped it because of probably litigation, too much trouble, too much effort. The accidental discovery of truth that they didn't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
But Lila Rose, James O'Keefe, they began to perfect it. Lila did it in abortion clinics, Planned Parenthood. James did it in a major way, and he's a brand now. I mean, he's a major player in this field. David DeLighten, a friend of them both. I'll tell DeLighten's story here because it's not as well known as the others.
Okay.
He worked with Lila Rose in California. He's a young guy. I don't think he's 30 yet. But in about 2014, he put together this entity called the Center for Medical Progress.
Right.
It was a for-profit entity that brokered baby parts, fetal tissue, between the abortion clinics and the research labs.
Right.
What I admired about this project is how much time and effort they put into it. He and his partner, Sandra Merritt, and how elaborate was their ruse. They had to totally familiarize themselves with this industry, know all of the terminology, create websites and other material sufficiently convincing to allow Planned Parenthood to open walk them in their doors. And the videos they created are so shocking that Hillary Clinton said she was shocked. It was the one moment where Planned Parenthood was on the cusp of being cut off from civilized society. And they, as the O'Keefe style, and O'Keefe learned this from the MVP of my book, Andrew Breitbart, how to release videos. You release the first video, denial. It's an exception. It's an anomaly. It won't happen again. A couple days later, boom, number two. Washington, Baltimore, okay, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, you know.
So much for that.
And so DeLighten used the strategy that O'Keefe perfected that he learned from Andrew Breitbart. These people are all in their 20s when they're doing this, you know?
It's amazing.
O'Keefe brings down Acorn, a $2 billion corporation, as a 23-year-old working off his credit cards. He doesn't have any funding whatsoever, right?
Yeah.
DeLighten is 25 when he starts this, and it's methodical. I've met DeLighten. He's a very methodical guy, a very tight-lipped kind of.
But he paid a hell of a price for it.
He's still paying. He's being sued, and he's arrested, you know? On the charge of what? Entering a Planned Parenthood under a false identity. Come on.
Well, I got to tell you, Jack, I used to do this. I used to, as an investigator, go in and under a pretext or under a different identity. And, of course, if you're going in on a criminal matter, you better have your butt covered, or civil matter, depending on the amount. You know, the same thing, too. It could be worse, even. So I respect the guy. But I've seen conservatives and Christian conservatives just come after him. One Christian writer, which has a blog, Jack, I blew my mind saying, no Christian would ever set up a company like this and go in under a pretext because it's... Anyway, I don't know.
That's an interesting point you raise, because I know Lila Rose pretty well, too, and I've been talking to her, and she said the same thing. She said, I can't believe the criticism I get from from Christians saying,
what the hell's undercover?
Going on there? Yeah. She goes, did they criticize the police for going undercover?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, I mean, most cops are Irish. The FBI is heavily dominated by Catholics.
Right.
And yet, I've never seen an article anywhere saying criticizing cops. But what Dalyden is doing, he's going places the cops can't go.
That's
or
right.
won't go because their bosses won't let them go.
Yeah.
You know? So, but here's the detail. The one detail that just struck me as interesting. When this story emerges, they are shaking. Planned Parenthood is, it's the point where Hillary Clinton has backed off. You know, Obama's, Josh Ernst has asked this at an Obama press conference, and he's even timid about this. Because when you look at a video, and I'm going to describe it here, it's horrific, but it's,
yeah.
You're looking at a young clinician picking through a tray of baby body parts, talking about their worth on the commercial market. Oh, here's a heart; it's in good condition. Oh, here's some lungs. You know, and it's you're seeing this on video, and video has a power that other media do not.
That's right.
That really shook Planned Parenthood, shook Washington. So, what does Planned Parenthood do? Who do they hire? This is shocking. Fusion GPS, right?
No.
This is, before anyone heard of Fusion GPS, they hire Fusion GPS to solve their problems for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what Fusion GPS does is they look at all the videos. They actually, just like O'Keefe started doing, was putting all the unedited videos up. Anyone wants to see them to show that there's no tricks here and no false things. Dalyden has his all posted. They're commissioned by Planned Parenthood to examine just four of the videos, the unedited versions.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I talked to Dalyden, he said, yeah, there's editing. Yeah, we went to the bathroom. We turned the cameras off, We're undercover. Right? We're going to have it on all the time. So So what Fusion does is they come out with this report, and it's, yes, the videos were edited. It's just a nonsensical report.
Sure.
And so what did the major media do? Instead of watching the videos, the unedited videos themselves, they go to Fusion GPS. And they said, Fusion GPS discredits, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then Planned Parenthood has its friends in California and Kamala Harris included.
Sure.
And in Houston,
arrest
Dalyden and for, some vague, bogus thing. And then by the time the election rolling around, Planned Parenthood is talking about the criminal fake videos put out
by
Fusion GPS.
Yep.
And that is part of the price of the battle, is that you're not going to win all the time, And it gets very frustrating for the people in there fighting. And yet at the same time, every person who saw that video, every person who dared themselves to watch Dalyden's videos, I can't imagine they'll ever give money to Planned Parenthood again.
I agree. And the videos are still up. I think Center for Medical Progress. On their website. Yeah, it's absolutely blows my mind in the talk of – by the way, talking about this over salad and, wine
and
food and laughing about this. And thank you. We would never know. Well, we suspected, but we'd never have the videos had they not.
Oh, no, and that's okay. Just an enormously concentrated 2-year effort,
That was amazing. When that came out, man, I knew that was going to leave a mark.
Yeah.
But Kamala Harris, really? You're going to, so.
Our would-be VP? That's another story for another day, huh?
Yeah. Well, hey, it's up to you, but I'll tell you what. Who the hell's going to be? I'm sorry. Who's going to be on the left's ticket this,
Well, that's a good question. And we all beat it around. Will Joe Biden make it to November,
Yeah. I don't know. What's propping him up?
Here's an interesting detail. His propping him up literally.
Yeah.
Is Jill Biden. Jill, his wife, right?
Right.
Dr. Jill Biden.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. We've all thought that they left the impression that Jill Biden was a doctor. Well, she's got like an EDD from some, diploma mill, right? I mean, that's Dr. Joe Biden. Jill Biden. And what's beautiful is that she, her book, she wrote a book a couple years ago, and it's dedicated to Edith Wilson.
Mm.
Is her name ring a bell?
Edith Wilson. Let me think. Oh, do tell.
The wife of Woodrow Wilson, the woman who took over from her debilitated husband and ran the White House for the last 18 months of his presidency.
Gee, Jack, it seems that I remember that name because I think there was a question asked on a impromptu test, given that you're...
at one of our mm-hmm. annual to-dos, right?
Yeah,
right?
I got it wrong, of course, but yeah, I remembered it now. But
yeah. No, that was thanks for coming. It's August 23rd this year, so save the date.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I think Jill is the force holding him up, right? I mean, and it's a shame, you know. I mean, he's. Except that it's Joe Biden, and you know I don't really care about anything. I can't pretend to care. But it's we all get old. But it's elderly abuse what they've been doing to him for the last year. You know he shouldn't be up there. And it's obvious to everyone except the left. They shield themselves from that information. They don't see what we see. They don't see the videos we see.
But then isn't it interesting how they project that on Donald Trump? Where, hey, you know, walking down that ramp, did you see how fragile he is walking down the ramp? Or mispronouncing a couple of words, and I can't remember what they were now. This big to-do about his mispronunciation of a couple of words.
Yeah, right. And in the ramp walk, he had to explain it in his speech, you know,
at
the kickoff speech. We know that's the way they roll, but... On the opposite side, and it needs to be reinforced, and that's why I talk about the Samizdat. They're my heroes in this book. That's why they're acknowledged and dedicated to, is because they're the ones who are keeping this country together.
Amen.
They are as such. They will always be. And the social media giants, Jack Dorsey, I believe, is the founder of Twitter, said, "If I had known that Twitter was going to get Trump elected, I never would have invented it." You know, as hard as they try to. Unbalance the playing field, which they do.
Yep.
That their vehicles are more valuable to us than they are to them, because they get all their media from the top. Ours all comes up from the bottom. You know.
And I think it's important for everyone to realize that. Did you hear what Jack just said? Okay, ours comes up. We are rising up from the bottom, but we're making a difference. And then thank you for doing that. Thank you for spreading the links and for, in fact, thank you for buying Jack's book. And I mean this because it in spreading the link for Jack Heschel's book, there it is right there, Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency, and failed indeed. I like that picture, by the way, of Obama on the cover.
You know, I'm going to give Joel Gilbert credit again. He was the one who designed the cover.
I saw that in the credits there.
Yeah, yeah.
But that tells a lot, folks. Go to Amazon. Is there any other place people can get it besides
right
Amazon?
Now, I mean, maybe Barnes & Noble. I try to use Amazon as little as possible. Yeah. So I use Barnes & Noble, and I buy all ebooks. But I would also say, while you're looking for books, I'd also got to recommend The Hunt. I'm sorry, it's my novel.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
And it's a good summer read. And, it's a very positive, upbeat action adventure story.
Yep.
Designed specifically for it's a father son kind of book, you know. So
exactly, and that came out. When did that come out? I'm looking right here.
Came out in December.
Yeah,
and then we ran into the whole COVID thing, and you know.
Yeah, that was a good read for me. That was a good read. The Hunt. In fact, if you go to Amazon. There it is.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate that.
Got 4.5 stars. Yeah, what happens? Here's how their firemen work. I'm going to just talk about their devious parts.
Do that.
At the higher level, you have people like Media Matters and BuzzFeed and whatnot. At the lower levels, you have amateur firemen. What they do is they'll write. Maybe they're not amateurs. Maybe they are being paid. I think everyone on their side is being paid. They they'll go to your book reviews and give you one star.
Yeah,
you know?
I've seen
They'll
that.
Go to your Wikipedia page and mess with it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, Wikipedia is a great service. Don't let the people who are messing with the political stuff deter you from using it. I give to them. I donate to them. It's done from the bottom. Their people are out there. So, for instance, the last time I looked at my Wikipedia page, I'm a conspiracy theorist. This time, I was a pornographer. Right?
Oh, really?
Jack Heschel, writer, conspiracy theorist, pornographer. Right?
have I seen anything you did? Never mind.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I am bizarrely, pornography is the one thing that I am totally anti, you know.
Of course.
I break my libertarian pattern to be anti-pornography. I don't look at it, don't buy it, don't deal with it. And here I am as a pornographer. Probably someone heard me say that, and then they said, well, let's mess with them. Let's make them a pornographer.
Oh, you know? My goodness.
Anyhow.
Wow. Yeah, you took me off track there just now. Yeah. Okay. Eric the Tech, I lost all track of time. We got what? Okay, so we got about 10 minutes left of the program.
Okay, good,
take it where you want it.
Let me throw it back to you, Doug, and I'd like to get you, because this is something you follow on a day-to-day basis. You know, when I wrote the last chapter on the Eastern Front, Russian collusion,
mm-hmm.
You know, my problem was my book, I sent in my draft in November, right? Now, I got a couple more shots at it to fix it up and tweak it, but probably the last time I did was April. And so far, nothing major has happened that I haven't accounted for. What I did, though, and this is turning out to be useful, not only did I focus on Seth Rich in that case,
mm-hmm.
but I also focused on Obama's role. Because my book is about Obama. So I wasn't just going to write about, you know, Peter Stroke and
right.
Lisa Page and all, even though that's always amusing. I focused on Obama. Where was Obama? What was Obama doing? What was his role in this? And what's your take on that? What do you take away from recent events?
In regards to, maybe I missed the
question. His role in the whole Russia collusion plot.
Well, you pointed this out, and I think that I think it's very important for people to go back to, what was it, Inauguration Day?
Yeah.
When Susan Rice did that CYA
right.
email to,
right, right.
Hey, we did everything by the book.
Everything by the book, right.
Yeah.
So which book was it? It was like the book of Satan. I don't know what book it was.
Exactly. But. So, okay, so here's how I look at this, and I don't have... In the closing minutes, I don't have all the answers. I've got a bunch of questions, but I'll say this. I believe that Obama, I don't think he was intelligent enough to really, set this up, but I think that he approved this. I think what you said earlier about Brennan being like at the epicenter thing.
Yeah.
This whole Russian collusion stuff, I think originated by Brennan. With the approval of Obama. I don't know if this answers your question. And you get people like Susan Rice and all of the others. And of course, the regular names that we know, the Strzok and Page and
Comey and
yeah.
Clapper and the whole crew.
But I think it was telling that the texts, said POTUS wants to know everything we're doing, you know? And
right.
I think that's hard to really... So where was he? I think he was at the helm overseeing this, protecting the operation. I don't think he was the brains of it, but I think he certainly provided the imprimatur.
Yeah, I think that's exactly as I see it, too. And, you know, he's always been a leftist, but I always thought him... And he's always been immersed in leftist thought, but... I think all his life he's swum in the shallow end of that pool, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a Bill Ayers who's up to his neck.
Or,
Obama's been up to his knees waiting to see if it was warm enough to get in, you know?
Right.
And ready to get out if it wasn't.
Exactly.
But at the same time, he was a perfect front man. The original title of my book was Could Be the Front Man.
Which I found very interesting because that is the chapter one.
The right. Front Man. The Front Man. And I, unmasking Obama was actually a very prescient a name switch. I'll give Joel a little credit for that. He'll probably take all credit, but, the fact is, and I'm going to get my history wrong and I'm going to hate myself. Was it Henry II who said of Becket, will someone please rid me of this troublesome priest, you know?
You're asking me?
And then, Susan, they must know. I don't know. It was one of those guys.
No, it was Henry VIII.
The quote was, will someone please rid me of this troublesome priest?
Okay.
And then his minions hear that, and then they take action that the king would never have taken himself, but that he'll be happily absolve them of when they're caught or not caught, you know?
That's a good analogy.
Now, what happens here is that Obama says, Well, someone please, you know, this now would be, we're before November.
Right.
They say it safely, knowing that these guys, knowing that whoever, they're girls getting elected, you know?
Yep.
So they don't have to worry. They'll have their books clean. They'll be, mm-hmm. they'll come out as heroes if the story even comes out at all. If Hillary's elected, we've never heard of this plot, you know?
Sure.
We don't know about the FISA applications. Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are probably still getting it on somewhere, you know? I can imagine. Imagine that love talk. Making those squirrely faces. But Brennan, though, I think Brennan is going to, you know, Brennan and I share very comparable demographics, you know, we're born, place, Catholic, mm-hmm. New Jersey, et cetera. Mm-hmm. He went dark. And he shows up in the book in the first time, and this is, he's threaded throughout the book.
Yes.
In 2008, when his company Analytics goes into the Obama passport.
Yep.
And I'm sure they did something to it. Because that's only after that that he begins to start talking about Pakistan.
That's true.
And they were in bed from the beginning, and perfect bedmates they did make, you know?
You know, the people don't remember, and people need to remember that passport office break-in. And again, that's when Brennan was the national security advisor on the campaign trail in Pakistan, and how he had to address Pakistan.
And only after the passport breach was he able to. Doesn't mention it, Pakistan in either of his two books, even though he's allegedly spent a month in Pakistan.
Some people think he couldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
When you couldn't go. And some people think he spent a year there, like his whole junior year abroad. But nonetheless, we know he went to Pakistan.
Right.
He couldn't talk about that at all until after the passport something happened to that passport. It may have been they just looked at it and said, okay, you're clear. It doesn't violate anything. But they went in there, and he gets caught.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And at that time, Brennan has fewer than 100 employees.
Right.
CNN reports that the guy who gets caught works for Brennan, and that Brennan's an advisor to Barack Obama, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the story gets dropped.
Of course.
And then a few months later, when Brennan's being nominated to be chief terrorism advisor, whatever, security advisor.
Yeah, advisor.
They write a big article in Washington Post. Don't even mention the passport. Don't even mention that he was involved in this. Don't even mention poor Lieutenant Quarles Harris, who's dead in the streets of Washington. You know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is.
And that's why the battle is really, Obama's the battleground. The battle is between our guys, the Samizdat, and their guys, the major media and their firemen, you know, the toadies, like Gilbert was. Thinking back now to what's the name? The Shepherd book movie Christmas Story, right? Now,
wait a minute.
I sound like Joe Biden here, just flailing around. The movie.
No, you don't. but I'm starting to think like Biden. I think
Gene Shepherd's one of my favorite guys. I mean, they make him a very popular movie now, Christmas Story with Gilbert the toady to, what was the evil guy? Help me out, Nan. Come on. Oh, man, you guys are worse than I am.
Oh, hell, I'm thinking of Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase.
No.
All right.
Evan, your audience is sitting there. Of course, it's blah, 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 and his evil little toady, Gilbert. Well, that's what I was thinking of the evil little toady here was the Gilbert factor, you know? So, anyhow, forget that wasted analogy.
What the hell? Okay,
that'll come to me when I'm driving back.
Otherwise, I mean, it's live. You can't cut this out.
19 tons, right? 19 tons, is that it? 17 tons?
17 tons.
When we were driving to Washington, we had this stupid debate. This about how many tons Ernie Ford sang about in a classic song. Right?
Well, now you're going to have to answer that.
So 17? Nin and Susan say 17. I said, that's wrong. It's not 17. I said, that's one syllable too many. They said, how many tons is it? I said, 19. 19 tons. So fortunately, we have Google on our phones. We have to look it up, and of course, it's 16 tons. It's
16.
Yeah, right. it's like not knowing.
And what do you get, right?
Yeah, right. Another day older and deeper in debt. Now, at that time, everyone knew that song. It was like not knowing, like the Beatles saying, "I want to hold your what?" What were you listening to?
Eric, the tech. Stop that! I heard what you said in my ear.
Anyhow,
folks, it was a great 2 hours.
Scott Farkas and his evil little toady Gilbert.
Farkas?
Scott Farkas, right. In Christmas Story. It just came to me. Right?
You okay?
Okay. Now, I just wanted to clarify that I'm not that far down the memory trail here, you know, so.
I don't know about that, folks. Scott Farkas. Happy birthday, Susan Daniels, PI. And, Jack, thank you so very much for coming in.
My pleasure, Doug. And keep up the great work.
You know what? I'm not even sure what I'm doing. Hey, TWA 800, make sure you grab a hold of that. But also, Unmasking Obama, put that up on the screen if you can, if you don't mind. Do you mind?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, pre-orders matter now because, oddly, it's the publishing world has changed. You got to get there.
Got to go? All right.
Okay.
Good night, everyone. Roger Stone tomorrow. Good night.